Tattoo by David Van Corter. In this poem, I'm trying to use repeated rhyme to explore the reasons why people have tattoos. It's from the perspective of the artist. I sculpt this soaring bird upon your skin. My needle sharp as glass, I make it fly. Expose its wings to heat and feel it rise above the layers of your flesh to melt as it gets near the sun. The air so thin it fuses with your breath, a living pelt that twists around your fragile bones, your spine, enclosing all the nervous pain you felt when you first said to me, a bird, please try to hide my paleness and let it sing. The ink envelops you, its gentle sting a balm for every wound that life has dealt. And so I carve this animal, your prize, a warden and an avian disguise, its feathers your raw clothes, its claws your belt. I see beyond your eyes a feral thing, both more and less than human, taking wing. Unveil your underside, a sore, a welt. Perspective. This is a short poem based on a photo of myself as a teenager. And I was sitting in a riverboat. I think it was in Wales. On another day, I could steer the boat upstream, challenge the flow, and then, behind dark shades, decide on my direction. But those are different eyes with unseen reflections, and the river is too slow. I pass myself halfway. Modern Dance. This is a true story about a record that I found in an Ipswich shop a few years ago. A £1 purchase in a vinyl store, when taken home, reveals an inner sleeve adorned with felt-tip markings, a loving catalogue of bands and band members spelled out, labelled with hearts and doodles, from the pen of some unnamed teenage girl in 1981. This paper cover is a slice of history, recorded louder and with greater clarity than each vibrating groove. The needle skips past unknown landscapes as I'm taken back to her, hearing her dream life played through tinny speakers in an Ipswich flat, her synthesised escape rotating at 33 RPM. She travels from a Berlin nightclub to Japan, the crackle of dust her only barrier between a life of glamour and her own half-formed, direction-fearing grasping in the dark, the world so strange and empty. These sounds are whispering only to her and me. And so she writes and documents the names in multicoloured script, making her mark and hiding it, a time capsule for me to find all these years later. By now, I guess she's lost within the whirl of modern life, with teenagers herself, deep in their MP3s, dancing in the data stream, and looking there for inspiration and connection. On it goes, revolving. But if we scratch the surface, we can bind our time with echoes, then and now. Try to reach a space that's hidden and uncharted, which can bring us here together as we journey through the notes that make us who we are. Details of the Fallen. So this poem is based on a book researching the history of the names on the Wheat Hampstead World War I Memorial. And I wrote it sort of as a commission for an exhibition in Wheat Hampstead. I trace the line of one lone soldier, treading a path through no man's land, in his fist a silver pocket watch, a fish on a chain. What was he before? Travel agent's clerk, golf club maker, telephone engineer, salesman for suits. No one remembers. Fog moves in, our targets blur and multiply. Should we fire at these ghostly shapes or dig into our position, awaiting orders? We are entrenched, our hushed tones rebounding from the low clouds, echoes in a pressure cooker. There has to be an enemy somewhere out there. My trigger finger holds and shakes. something will explode, and that's the sign. I try to find that man again, but he is gone, dissipated in the Ypres mud, his footprints spelling out his epigraph. Parties dug in where they could, objective almost gained. The march to victory goes on. Mirror Lake. This poem is about reflection and warped memory, and it was written after I returned to a place that I'd visited with my late wife, and it was 10 years after. 10 years ago, Yosemite in spring, we took the easy route to Mirror Lake, you still fit enough to clamber over rocky paths for miles until our lack of water finally defeated us at the tiny bridge. We ambled back another way, along a river piled high with boulders as big as trucks. It's autumn now, and I retrace, as midges swarm around my face. At every turn I think I see you up ahead. The path is winding differently, any moment now. I find the bridge. It leads nowhere, poised like a painting, and the sign for Mirror Lake points only to a dry plateau, its water seasonal. I stand within its circle, breathe the panorama, such dry air. You've gone, and now I can't recall if we ever came here at all. The ground reflects our footprints. I try to follow them, but blocked by rocks, dead-end memories I've closed. Were we here, or were we only passing through? Mirror Lake consumes us in its folds, as if I'm the one who died, and you're alive, walking backwards to seek out this place, 10 years from now, remembering how life suddenly dried up, absorbing us. Snow Grip. This is a poem for icy times. The snow has come, my car wedged. It's inches of icing pockmarked with bird tracks. In blanket and dressing gown, I watch others graft with shovels, enabling my escape. They scrape away cold scraps, hack at raw earth. I feel friction in the window pane, and through the net, I and my cats assess the pickings of the day. Above us, countless flakes breathe in a holding shape, until slowly they release their breaks. Via. This poem was written during my trip around the world. I spent 2 months going around the world and going to all sorts of different countries. And at one stage, I found myself on a train in Canada, and the train took 3 days to get from point A to point B. Saskatchewan in winter. Open plains of wide, unknowable snow, stretching out like blank, unwritten pages, punctuated now and then by a tree or a rock or a trail of prints. Not human soles or tire tracks, but of some invisible creature that calls this vast, breath-freezing canvas home. This journey's taken days, and from my cosy, snaking viewing car, I try to capture snapshots, moments as snowflakes, caught before they melt inside this capsule, slowly meandering between freight trains, expanding landscapes, tiny towns. Blink, and it's gone. This transitory place is guided by old tracks and time that bends to its persistent rhythm. Gotta get up, gotta get out, gotta get there. And somewhere, in the space between departure and arrival, I become one of my own photographs, a flaky outline of a passenger, a blurring shadow framed by frozen air. String Theory. So this is an attempt to write about my cats, but also to write about theoretical physics at the same time. My cats won't play with static toys. They have to be balletic, with a puppeteer of human hands to make a plain string dance. The game becomes a battle, not of cat v string, but of feline versus human, in multiple dimensions. A flurry of movement, fur and claw is everything, a moment of release, the creation of a wake in which the instigator meets his shadow, thrown in twisting, complex shapes, outwitted by the light. We all meet here, chasing our tails, never quite seeing the point, but knowing how it moves, and will move on. The Butterfly Effect. This poem is just a tumble. A shoelace snaps, you throw it across the room. Your cat chases it, tosses it from paw to mouth, leaps through the cat flap, takes it to the patio, where a starling is startled, takes wing, soars above the roofs. As others join her, they swirl in the air, arcing and weaving. A young mother in the park looks up, distracted. Her toddler makes a dash for it, gets 10 yards, slips, lands with a thunk. 2 second pause. Then the wailing starts. His mother lifts him up, the volume doubles, and across the way, the writer on the park bench loses his train of thought. The poem peters out. He tears a page from his book, throws it in the litter. This disturbs a wasp on a fruit lolly stick, who buzzes off, diverts towards the street, enters the window of a purring car. The traffic lights turn green. The driver puts his foot down as the wasp crawls in his hair. At the crossroads, there's a screech, a crash, a scream. The lights go out. Bones snap. Back home, you curse. And vow in future, no cheap shoes.
My Brother's Watch by Gillian Nibbs. My brother's watch works with the warmth of skin. It must have stopped when he went cold. I wish I'd checked to see what time it was. The face is black with 4 quartz dots and 2 svelte hands that twitch when I wrap it in my palm. The glass is scratched, the body scuffed with unnamed scars. I buckle the fading strap at its habitual notch and stare beyond the time into the black. Somehow I might reach him, tap into those final moments. But there is nothing. Perhaps it all happened too quickly to leave the essence of memory on his things. I press the watch to my lips, warm it with my breath, keep it ticking. Wasp watching. The scrape is clearly audible, makes me look for a chisel-toothed rodent. On a hot afternoon, when not much moves, this creature is furrowing pale stripes into my wooden fence. I have seen wasps eat spiders, gore old meat thrown from dustbins by cats. Wasps have made my children scream. Swollen knots of wasp spite burn for days. I will carefully usher moths or crane flies to the outside world, but wasps deserve no less than to be vengefully squashed or pushed down plug holes. Today, I won't even twitch my magazine for fear of frightening her away. She's pulping wood to make a nest, a papery frame of exquisite design hung, no doubt, in my loft. I make a mental note to buy some spray. Crossing the road in Sri Lanka. Each bend of the mountain road carried a new warning. Boar crossing. Wild buffalo crossing. Hare crossing. Jungle fowl crossing. An unlikely menagerie of animals practising their highway code. But all we saw crossing was a woman in flip-flops, a basket strapped on her back to collect the requisite 40 pounds of tea plucked with toughened fingers on the high, wind-aired slopes of Neurelia. Down in the town, we picked our way between the fizzing tuk-tuks that slalomed cattle. We stepped out as mopeds and vans pulled blindly into the road and buses ploughed through, blowing horns. Leukemia. You can squeak the fingertips of surgical gloves if you get the right amount of air in them. Everyone who comes pulls and rolls the plastic, feeling for their palms' familiar grooves, biting their nails under cover. If you leave the room for just 1 second, you must re-glove and re-pinny before you return. Even the consultant risks my mother's stern stare if he dares to front an unsanitised pullover. To me, it all seems rather arbitrary. I'm sure my hair must crawl with germs. I daren't kiss my father, but I breathe his air, hissing into it a plethora of microbes. When I laugh, I'm sure I double the load. A porter's arm passes coffee through the door. He can't come in, he says, he's got a dreadful cold. I want to hurl the cup through the window like a grenade with the pin pulled. Dad drinks stoically, pretends he's been poisoned. A nurse rushes in to borrow the stethoscope. I wonder if it will come back properly sterilised. I wonder if this is all just an elaborate ritual to bolster the patient, convince him a battle plan is drawn when all along the white flags, pressed and starched, have lined the linen cupboard wall. There was you. You stayed inside all summer, avoiding the blast of that unprecedented heat. I struggled through it, dipping my feet in the paddling pool and wondering if I had enough love to share between two. My God, you were heavy, you and your entourage of life support. Each night, for weeks, at 3 a.m, you knocked and listened, wouldn't come. And then one dusk, enjoying doorstep cool, I saw you drift across the sky, a boy, no doubt about the form. Next morning, there was you. 18th birthday. In the Maharaja curry house in Bexley village, white flowers fire across monsoon blue. Five beings are scooped together. We are good at being good friends. Eyes sparkle. Glasses are raised and cigarettes perched between bold fingers. Friend one is relaxed, aloof. Friend two is animated, baby-faced. Friend three is most insecure, never looks into the camera. I am ridiculous, grinning, giggling. But she is quizzical, dainty, flirtatious. She is the centre of attention. Maharaja waiters get in on the action, bring drinks on the house, banana fritters. This is our official launch into the adult world, the white heat of possibility before monsoon breaks. At 18, we splash barefoot through hard rains, let the mud seep between our toes, wear bin liners, catch cold, and go again.